I'm very excited this week to welcome Kira Onisko. You're going to have to tell me if I said that wrong, Kira.
No, you said it perfectly.
To the podcast. Kira is a non-diet and size-inclusive PT based in Ontario, Canada. After developing her own food and body image struggles, she now promotes a body-neutral approach. She helps her clients focus on how their workouts make them feel rather than look, something that I preach all the time. Kira and I bonded over our mutual love of Paul Rudd, which is very important. Go look him up if you don't know who Paul Rudd is. And I followed her for quite some time, and her content really resonates with me. So welcome, Kira.
Thank you so much for having me, Christine. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Oh, me too. And I'm going to try and rein it in and not chat the leg off you like I often do. But I would love to start, Kira, with you just sort of talking a little bit about your, I always use the word journey, even though I don't like it, but your journey to the non-diet space.
And yeah, absolutely. We just need a better word for journey, don't we? But there isn't one.
No. Exactly.
Yeah, so it's definitely been a long, sometimes bumpy road. And it took me obviously a while to get to this place. I think you can probably agree as well that most fitness professionals don't start off in the space that you and I are in. It takes us some trials and tribulations and a lot of self-reflection, I think, to get to this spot. But I was always very active growing up. I was a competitive gymnast. Movement, fitness, sport was always a really big part of my life. Absolutely love gymnastics, still do. I mean, not like I can do so much now, obviously, but it's still a big part of me. And I think I took that into starting fitness as a career because that was a big part of my identity. But something that is really common for people who are or in any sport, but especially sports like gymnastics or like dance, figure skating, sports that can be very like aesthetic focused, is that I started having some funky issues with food from too young of an age. I mean, any age is not a good age to be dealing with any of that stuff. But so that was already kind of on the back burner when I started going into fitness as a career. So what ended up happening is that I stopped doing gymnastics. Again, like a lot of gymnasts, we have short shelf lives. Like you're not really able to take it super far unless you're very, very good or whatever. So I stopped probably like mid high school. And there's a few years where I was kind of just like a little bit lost with movement. I think it's really common too for people who were athletes in competitive sports. You're very used to structured styles of training or like a coach telling you what to do. And so when you don't have that anymore, you're like, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do now. So after a few years of not really being super active, I was like, I really miss this part of my life again, because it was so integral to my identity. I was like, I really want to get back in some type of routine, get back into fitness. So I would have been like around 20 at this time.
Okay.
And so like someone might do now, even though this was over a decade ago now, I went onto social media to see what people were doing, to follow different trainers and try and get guidance on how to become fit, become healthy, and very different landscape than it is now, thankfully. Obviously, we still have a lot of work to do with the fitness world today, but 10 years ago, even more of a dumpster fire. And very much, I feel like if you were in the fitness space on social media, you were a bodybuilder or a bikini model. And like those disciplines, if you want to call it that, are very, very aesthetic focused. And so back then, I was very much getting into fitness from the perspective of I'm trying to make my body look a certain way. I'm trying to lean out. And the way that they were eating was also to try and facilitate that. So very, very aesthetic focused fitness practices. You know, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that as well. You're on the elliptical. Yeah. There wasn't so much a sense of like performance or like trying to get strong or any type of thing like that. It was like, you're trying to look a certain way. And so I was following that very much because you just don't know any better. Right. Like, and at that time I wasn't a fitness professional yet. I hadn't gone to school for exercise science, which I ended up doing. And so you see these people with large followings, again, just like you might do today, and you think, well, they're the expert. So what they're teaching and promoting must be the right way. It must be correct. And so that kind of led me down this path for a good several years of very strict eating and exercise habits, never feeling satisfied with the way that I looked, even though my whole life was revolving around trying to look a certain way. So kind of a lot of irony there, where it's like, what are we even doing here? And it took me a long time to realize that what I thought were these healthy practices were actually damaging me more than they were helping me. So that's kind of long story short. But in order to get to where I am now, I think I had already been in exercise science doing my undergrad degree. And so I think that's an important thing to highlight as well, that a lot of people, trainers, dietitians going into their field are doing so a lot of the time from a disordered mindset. And so that's a scary thing to think about when we have these health professionals that are coming into the field in such an unhealthy place themselves. So that's where I was at, getting into exercise science, going through my degree, still very much focused on trying to look a certain way, exercise and eating to look a certain way. Clean eating was very big, our favorite term. So like very much trying to adhere to that, whatever that even means, because it's doesn't mean anything. It's a ridiculous saying, but anyways, I digress. So at this point I had actually started doing CrossFit.
Okay.
And I know this will be a good transition into what we want to talk about today, but that was good in a way because it did help take me away from exercises only to look a certain way, only to burn calories, only to lean out, whatever, to you can use exercise to get stronger, get faster, to improve your mobility. And so it definitely was helping me to shift my mindset to more of a performance based approach to fitness. But at the same time, and again, maybe it's better now. I don't think that it is. But again, 10 years ago, if you were in CrossFit, there's also a very heavy influence of eating the right way. Eating a very particular way. So I think for me, coming into it already with my own issues with food, I was, you know, starting to get this better approach to fitness through the performance aspect, but I was still very worried about eating properly. Like the paleo thing was very big then. So that was still holding me back and was still, really making me struggle with my relationship with food until I left CrossFit. I joined like an Olympic weightlifting only club because I loved like the deadlifting, the squatting, the clean and jerks. And I'm not a huge like runner or anything cardio based. So I didn't love that about CrossFit, but I loved all the weightlifting. So I was like, sweet, let's leave this running behind. Leave the running behind. Let's go to this weightlifting club. And that was also very instrumental in getting me more to where I am now because we would train and we would, you know, try and perform our best, but then people will also be bringing like fun donuts or cookies or treats that they had found throughout the week. And it wasn't in a way of like, we're working out so we could have, it was just like, why not? Right. Like you can, you can work out and enjoy fitness and you can also eat fun things. Yeah. And that was the first time that I'd seen that those things could coexist like in a fitness space. And so that was also really helpful in pulling me further away from you need to exercise the right way. You need to eat the right way.
Yeah.
And then around the same time, I was taking a class in university, an elective class. So if I hadn't taken this class, who knows where I would have been, but it was a gender studies class. And we had someone come in, a guest speaker, to talk about health at every size. And I remember just being gobsmacked, like, yeah. in a negative way. Like, I just couldn't believe that they were saying these things. It was so opposite from everything, even that we were learning, like, in university, like in all of my other classes, because, you know, in university, my classes were still very weight centric.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it was shot. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my classes, for like the final exam, we had to do waist circumference on people, like just all sorts of bullshit like that. Yeah. So then to have this other class where they're essentially saying the exact opposite, talking about, you know, the O word and how that is a social construct, when in all of my other classes we're talking about how to prevent. And it's just like, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And it made me really angry, to be honest, because I was like, how could anybody be saying these things? And I think it's just so, you know, you spend so much time, energy, even on yourself, trying to, you know, eat as right as possible. And then you have someone say, well, it doesn't really matter that much anyways. And you're like, what are you talking about? Like, what am I spending all of my time and energy on? So there was some seeds planted there. And I try to remind myself of this whenever I come across someone on the internet, as we do, who is incensed with something that we say. And it's like, well, you know, this also was me once upon a time. So people can change and come around. And so then, you know, seeds were planted. And around that time, this would have been like 2017, maybe 2016, 2017. And then I'm starting to see more things online about health at every size. Because again, before then, obviously it's been around for a long time and these ideas have been around for a long time, but it wasn't in my realm up until then. And then there was another trainer in the city that I was going to school in, and she was practicing from a weight neutral perspective in a gym. And I was like, wow, okay, yeah, there must be something here. And then the more I started to hear about it, the more I started to recognize in myself the things that they were saying could be harmful. And I was like, oh, so me trying to be a perfect eater for all these years is actually disordered. Okay, that makes sense. Why I would feel so much anxiety, why I never felt like I looked good enough, you know, all of these things to kind of start to put the puzzle pieces into place. Yeah.
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 I mean, there's so much there to draw on. It just reminds me of the clean eating. I remember going to a hotel with friends and bringing my own to a hotel where there was an amazing buffet breakfast. Mm-hmm. But I brought my own cereal because I had made it up. It was granola. It was homemade granola. And I knew exactly what was in it, the seeds, the coconut oil. I knew everything was clean. And I, rather than tasting the kind of the new food and that beautiful display of, you know, everybody was just enjoying it. And
yeah,
I just felt in that moment, I felt that's really a little bit sad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's amazing what really shocks you into realizing, you know, that the behaviors that you thought were just healthy in inverted commas were actually quite disordered.
Yeah. And especially when there are so many people that would praise you for doing something like that. Oh, you're so disciplined.
Yeah.
But it's like, is it disciplined or is it disordered? That's probably more disordered. Yeah.
And isn't it incredible that when you first heard about the health at every size, when you dig into the research, it's all there.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, why is that not in the mainstream curriculum? Why is that a optional elective module that not everybody is taking, you know? It's, to me, it's still, we have got so much work to do on that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice, you know, connecting with people like you. So, you know, that there are more and more fitness professionals that are promoting the same things that you and I are. But then you look at the personal training certification. And again, it's like you're taking so many steps back where
there is
that focus on, quote unquote, helping people lose weight. Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy when you think about it, but it's, Yeah. I was going to talk to you about the actual control that we have over our health is much less than we are mm-hmm. made to believe, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's been something that's been really helpful for me in learning to let go of that obsession around it. And that's not to say, you know, that you have absolutely no control or it's like, why even do anything that's health promoting, but it does take that pressure off yeah. because we really are led to believe that what you eat and how often you move is like 50 and 50 when it comes to your health outcomes. And it's so much less, like under 10%. I think some of the research has been saying, and then your social determinants of social health, determinants, your genetics, mm-hmm. So many things play such a larger role. So I think it's liberating to me personally to be like, okay, you know, you can take the pressure off. It's not all on me. There's things, you know, I could be dedicating my entire life to fitness, to eating quote unquote the right way. And yeah. you know, my genetics is playing 70% of what ends up happening to me. So it's like, I think that can be helpful for people to learn so that they can, you know, rest a little easier.
When I was studying to be an intuitive eating counselor, what I found really interesting was that, you know, everybody's body has a certain set point. So there's a range, isn't there? There's a range mm-hmm. that at certain times, so it changes throughout your life, but that's kind of where your body is happy at. If you nourish it and give it what it needs and wants. And mm-hmm. I think if you're spending your whole life trying to fight your way into a body, which yeah. is not actually how your body wants to be, which is not where your body is happy, that's not going to be a life where you can find joy and peace in food or movement, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And ironically, the more that you try and get into that, whatever you think the body you should be in, the more that your weight will drive up. And not that that's a problem, but it's like, if you are trying to slim down and the more that you work towards it and the harder that you diet, it's really working against you. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's, I definitely have to, I'm speaking from a point of a lot of privilege, you know, a straight size white PT, living in a, you know, first world culture and all that. But, you know, my clients, I've had clients say to me, oh, we really like you because you look normal. You don't look like a PT, which I used to be so distraught about. That used to make me so sad. I'm like, I am not working hard enough. I need to. Whereas now it makes me happy. So that's, yeah. It's come full circle because I'm like, I am excited that that makes people feel comfortable and that they can see actually that you don't have to look a certain way to be fit, to be strong, yeah. to, you know, to be quote unquote healthy. And but that transition, it takes a while.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have awesome clients. There still are so many people that get so mad whenever someone is on the internet who is a fitness professional who doesn't have stereotypical, again, air quotes, personal trainer body. Yeah. And it's yeah. like, how dare this person try and tell us how to exercise? Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it is so important. And again, just like you're saying, I hold a lot of privilege as well. And so I think it's really important to amplify and promote other trainers yes, who have different bodies than mine, because the more that people see trainers who mm-hmm. look different, have different body shapes, the more that they'll be able to understand themselves that exercise isn't a look, fitness doesn't have a look, and that you shouldn't be trying to achieve this unrealistic look.
And it's almost like sometimes it's quite nice to follow people who look like you. So follow trainers that actually have the same body type as you. Mm-hmm. You can get inspired by or motivated by how they're moving or what you would like to do, rather than thinking everybody looks like Jillian Michaels or, oh, yeah. you know, whoever.
yeah.
We had had a podcast last week with Mallory Burgess, who's the Auntie Gillian Michaels, as she calls herself. And that was a very nice, interesting chat.
Yes. Yeah, I bet.
But
yeah, she's kind of like the pinnacle of everything wrong in the fitness industry.
And, you know, I think it's still you. I listened to a podcast that you were on where you mentioned that our bodies being seen as business cards, you know, and it's you do feel that judgment when I sort of say, I often say sort of to people, I'm a fitness coach, people sort of have a look, they sort of look you up and down and go, oh, all right. You know, and it is, the judgment is there, and it's, yeah, there's a little bit of fighting to do, because you do should not, anybody listening, please do not judge or choose your personal trainer based on how you want to look.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's not your body. That's not your genetics. That's not your health history. That is nothing to do with you. And choose them based on rapport, their experience, how you feel when you're with them, if they're nice to you, you know, just so sorry, get off my soapbox.
Well, for sure. Yeah. And just like I was saying a little bit earlier too, even if, you know, you are working with a trainer who has a certain body type that maybe you think is more indicative of a fitness and fitness professional, like you don't know what they're doing to maintain that. You don't know what their habits are like, if they're actually healthy habits, because again, and it's even worse in the fitness industry, like same with dietitians, they have a much higher likelihood of having eating disorders themselves, but fitness professionals is even more so because of the perceived link between what people look like and how much they exercise. So again, you just don't know what they're doing. And it's very likely that they have issues with food and body themselves.
And, you know, it's quite scary to think that a lot of fitness professionals are actually coming into the field for those reasons. And that was certainly the case for me. And I know it is for so many people. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the CrossFit, your time at CrossFit, because CrossFit is an interesting one. It is still everywhere. CrossFit gyms are everywhere. And it's always been something I've shied away from because of, for me, there's still an emphasis on the clean eating and the, you know, all in, all or nothing approach. And I think they did a post on fitness in 100 words, and it was all eat clean, don't eat, you know, eat protein, less carbs, all of that. And
totally.
It just put
me off. And I know exactly what post you're talking about, because they got a lot of pushback for it. Which was great to see. And so, you know, it is surprising because so many other things over the last, we'll say, decade that would be super diety have evolved, right? Like Weight Watchers, trying to think of more examples, even just like Noom, like we are seeing but we are seeing this evolution where they're at least trying to be more sneaky. Though they're still doing the exact same things. But CrossFit, I don't think that they've really improved very much in terms of like trying to come across as more inclusive.
100%. And, you know, I'll just say quickly on Noom. I think Evelyn Tribbles, the co-founder of Intuitive Eating, sort of mentioned that they had bought all of the adverts on Google for Intuitive Eating. So that Noom would come up if you put Intuitive Eating, and they are not Intuitive Eating. So anybody that is listening, Noom are a diet. So they are not, they restrict calories, they calorie count. You've got certain foods that are allowed and not allowed, good and bad. They take your weight, they, you know, and it's, I went, did a bit of secret shopping and went on there and put my weight in, and it said, oh, you're over 40. You need to be really careful of your calorie intake. And it told me that I could lose up to 2.5 stone, which would have me incredibly low weight, which would have, given that I've an eating disorder history, please don't go to Noom if you are triggered at all by, you know, if you're trying to get off the diet train and you're trying to find your way to body peace, please don't go to Noom.
Absolutely. And they're, you know, they're particularly egregious too, because they use that like eating disorder recovery language, and so they're being seeked out by people who are trying to actually repair their relationship with food and making it even worse. So I think that's just really despicable for sure. So we are anti-Noom. Absolutely.
Anti-Noam, 100%. Sorry, Noam. No, sorry, not sorry. what I'm really interested to talk to you about is finding your way with movement. So you mentioned that, you know, movement is almost harder to find that intuitive approach to, or mm-hmm. that because there's still that idea of manipulating your body in some way when you're yeah. moving in a certain way. And obviously we have got, you know, there's memes out there and have been for years, strong is the new skinny. And everybody mm-hmm. sees that as a hugely positive change in the industry. Whereas, as we talked about, I see it as diet culture in a different jacket.
Yeah.
because it's not, strong is not a look, it's a state of being. It's not, mm-hmm. it shouldn't be a look. So what yeah. would you say to that, Kira?
Yeah, it's kind of just like trading one unrealistic standard for another.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, as conversations about diet culture become more common and more mainstream, people have this idea that diet culture is only trying to lose weight. But there's a whole lot of other yeah. things going on there too. And people also have to understand that a big facet of diet culture is this certain look, right? This idealized mm-hmm. body shape. And so I think that literally strong is the new skinny in terms of people are just trying to look strong.
Yeah.
And so that's one issue that I have with where things are going right now. But then there's also the ableism aspect as well, which is another mm-hmm. facet of diet culture that I don't see talked about a ton. And no. so I think, you know, there's this pipeline that is very common of people being obsessed, like I was, maybe like you were too, with just trying to be as lean as possible. And now it just gets turned to trying to look as muscular
yeah.
as possible. But it's also very like a very specific body shape, right? Like we were talking earlier about, okay, well, now you want the big glutes, you want the yes. thin waist, you want the upper body. So it's like, it's still an idealized body shape that people are trying to achieve in the exact same way as they were just trying to look thinner.
Yeah. You're trying to get that toned look in inverted yeah. commas, aren't you?
And I think it's doing people a disservice again, because it's so praised and celebrated, where it's like, how are people able to recognize then that those practices are still contributing to harm and negativity in their lives?
But how would you, so if you've come from, you know, you were talking earlier about coming from being an athlete to then trying to find your way with movement. If somebody has had a disordered relationship to movement, which I certainly mm-hmm. did for many years, how do you find your way back to a movement practice that is joyful, that works for you? You know, I'm just about getting there. It's mm-hmm. it's a work in progress. I would never yeah. say I'm there, because I've still got this. I really want to challenge myself. And I love a challenging workout, and I love,
yeah.
you know, occasionally I love a really to train for a marathon. I trained for a marathon a few months ago. I enjoyed the training, but then now I'm just seeing how I feel. So I'm going to do yoga this day. I'm going to do strength that day. I'll just mix it up and take a rest more. How do you find your way? How do you start rebuilding, yeah. rebuilding that trust with your body after punishing it mm-hmm. for so long?
Exactly what you're saying. I think it's very slow and steady. Yeah. I think for a lot of people, taking full time away from formal exercise mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. can be the way to go. I also think, you know, it gets really tricky when your whole identity revolves around having to perform a certain way or being at a certain fitness level. And so that's why I try and promote so heavily, like, fitness shouldn't be your whole entire life, because then yeah. if you don't have that anymore, if you aren't able to lift as much weight or do as many reps as any of us won't be able to at sometime in our lives, then you aren't so devastated when that yeah. happens. So making sure that you have other hobbies, other interests, it gets tricky too, because there is, you know, such that link between like fitness and mental health, where people are like, oh, well, I need to work out for my mental health. But then it yeah. gets to the point where it's like, that can't be your only form of self-care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So just making sure, I think, that you're a well-rounded person, learning more about, like we were talking about earlier, with those social determinants of health and what actually makes up your health status, and
yes,
understanding that you don't need to be the most active person in the world in order to be healthy, but also to be worthy as well. So learning more about that ableism and like where that pressure is coming from. So there's so much, much that needs to kind of go into the unlearning of it all, but that would kind of be where I would start from. For me, I did have to get to that point where I moved into performance, but then I got obsessed with performance. And so then it's like, now I'm at a place where, you know, I can't tell you the last time I like maxed out on something or that I like PR'd on a certain exercise. Like that's not my focus anymore. It's a tough transition to make. I think it's going to be different for everybody for sure. But I think just trying to reevaluate what fitness means to you and making sure that you're doing certain things because you actually want to be doing them. Yes. I think a lot of people are only doing types of exercise because of how they think that it's going to make them look. And that's, you know, that's still going to hold you back from having a positive relationship with exercise.
You know, it's so interesting what you said there about exercise as a way to sort of support your mental health. Exercise is a way to support your mental health. Mm-hmm. It is not going to be a cure or a panacea. Yeah. It is not going to be everything. It's not therapy. And I think agree. It's, you know, I know a number of people who use exercise as their therapy, and it's a stressor on the body. So exercise is a stressor. And the more you push it and push it and push it, your body will eventually get to the point where it will stop and say no. And it actually won't. It'll be detrimental to your mental and physical health. And I think that is everywhere as well across social media, that exercise is great for mental health. But as you said, it can't be the only thing. And if you really struggle to go a day without exercise, you know, and I think I heard in a podcast, how would you feel if you were told you can't exercise for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
You know, would that send you into a state of panic? What other tools, what else is in your toolkit? And it's something to think about because, you know, you can get really dependent on moving in a certain way. And I was certainly there. I used to really panic if I couldn't move, or I would come back from a holiday and be exhausted and go for a run immediately because I had to. I felt that real, you know, that what would happen if I didn't. I just, you know, that sense of panic.
Yeah.
So the first step, if you tend towards that overexercise, the first step, would you say, is maybe to try and take a day off here and there, and then, or how would you?
Yeah, time off. I think at the same time too, again, speaking from a place of a lot of privilege, I think because there is such a strong tie, like we've been talking about, between people using exercise as a way to manipulate their bodies. And it's especially interesting when you talk about it through like intuitive eating, because from my experience working with clients and just kind of seeing, you know, what's going on with other people, it's a lot easier to become intuitive with food before it is to become intuitive with movement. So I think
You get those cues, once you listen in and tune it, you can feel them and hear them, can't you?
So I think it's really important if someone is wanting to improve their relationship with movement to be doing work around unlearning their fat phobia and their anti-fat bias. I think that needs to be a big focus of the work, more so than just like finding exercise that you enjoy. You know what I mean? Because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how joyful your movement is if you still have idealized ideas of what you think your body should look like and fear of gaining weight. So I think that's probably the biggest step that should be taken there, is learning from educators who are in fat bodies and unlearning that bias for yourself.
Otherwise, it's just like a little sticking plaster on if you're just like, oh, I'm going to move for joy.
Yeah.
And I also find that with, if you're just working on body image and you're not actually working with tuning in and really listening and getting to trust and know your body, I think that again, it's like a sticking plaster, because it's not going to be the answer. Mm-hmm. So we'll put lots of resources on really good books, et cetera, to read about internalized fat phobia and just on learning that diet mentality that is in all of us. But we want to talk about that messy middle. So have you found the messy middle? How do you move? Do you move differently? Is it cyclical? For me, I find something I love. I do it for a while, and then I'm maybe like, actually, I need a break, and then I'll do something else. So, and I'm much better at doing that now, and actually going, I don't want to run today. I'm going to go for a little swim or a little paddle, and that's fine. And that makes me very happy. Have you found that spot where you feel like you've got the balance, or that you trust? How is your relationship with movement, Kira?
I feel like it's the best that it's ever been. And I think that's really interesting, because like I was saying earlier, I'm not necessarily working out to get stronger than I was before, or to really, I don't want to say improve, but it's not my biggest goal. And that's kind of something that I've been struggling with, how to promote exercise, because something that I would say, and I still do think that it can be applicable, but just not across the board, is that if you have been using exercise as a way to primarily change your body, to then focus on those performance goals, and to then, okay, so try and do more than you did last time. And that can kind of take you away from seeing exercise only as this aesthetic reason. And so I think that can help with people's like motivation and consistency, because they have something to work toward. And we know that performance-based goals are just better in so many different ways compared to aesthetic-based goals. But I'm still consistent. And I guess you could say, you could chalk that up to me being in the fitness industry. And, you know, that can make a big difference as well.
Where it's huge. Like,
this is also my job, literally. Yeah. So, and it's kind of one of those things, like, I don't even know if I have a full answer for you right now, which is like not what you want to hear, I'm sure.
No.
But it's something that I'm also working through and trying to understand myself, because it's like, what makes people motivated? What makes them consistent? I'm sure, you know, doing it for reasons other than looking a certain way is just more enjoyable of an experience all around. It makes people more likely to want to continue doing it, because it doesn't feel like you're being punished for something, or that, you know, you're already going into a workout with this mentality that you're wrong and you look wrong and you need to change it. So that gets taken off of the table. But, I don't even know if I answered your question. It's a newer thing for me as well.
I think you've really given everybody a lot to think about when you talk about, rather than just thinking of joyful movement, let's get to the root of diet culture and why we all want to shrink our bodies, and, you know, the racist roots of diet culture, and just start reading about fat phobia and what it, because there is a massive fear. I think we'd be lying to ourselves if we didn't, of gaining weight. Why are we scared? Why are we so scared of our bodies changing? You know, it's something that I think, to get to grips with that, and then you can kind of trust, you can let your body change as it's gonna. So it doesn't matter which exercise you choose, because your body's just gonna change as it's gonna change.
Yeah.
And you're not in control of that, nor do you need to be. And that's freeing. That's hugely freeing. So now if I'm thinking, right, what movement, because I like to mix it up, what movement would I like to do? I don't think, okay, that's going to make me look a certain way. I'm just like, that looks really fun. I'd love to try that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am someone who enjoys doing, for the most part, like similar things, maybe in like different ways, but I do really like weight training. But again, over probably the past like year or two, I was really focused up until then, like I had to lift only heavy weights. Yes. And I think that I still had this idea of, you know, the heavier weights that you lift, the more muscle you'll have, the more that you could be burning calories. And so there's kind of this idea that, like, if you're using lighter weights, it's not going to be as effective. but I'm enjoying the lighter weights now so much more. So again, I think the more work that I've been doing around unlearning that anti-fat bias has really helped me get to a place where I can better differentiate what I actually want to do versus, like, with the heavier weightlifting, what I think I should be doing or what I think I enjoy, when actually there's some ulterior motives there. And now I can get to a point too where maybe I'm thinking about doing like a weight training workout with dumbbells or whatever. And then I'm like, I actually don't feel like doing that. I'm just going to go for a walk, or I'm going to go like kayaking.
That is like, that is the drill. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love when I wake up and I'm going to do a strength training workout. And then I go, actually, I'm just going to lie on the floor and do a bit of yoga, or I'm going to do a bit of mobility, or I'm just going to go for a walk.
Yeah.
That's tuning in to me. That's like really tuning in. Mm-hmm. And listening, and rather than being led by what you should do this, you should do this.
Yeah.
And what you were talking about with the heavy weights, it's so relevant to my community, because I tend to teach women over 40 mainly. And, you know, as we head towards peri-postmenopausal years, there's a massive emphasis on strength training, as there should be. You know, we lose bone density, muscle mass at an accelerated rate. But you hit the nail on the head. I tried powerlifting and I did not love it, but I love a kettlebell. Yeah. I love a kettlebell and I love swinging it at home and doing all the stuff. And that, I will be consistent with that.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoy it. I did not enjoy going to the gym, and some people love that, which is great. But I think it's that should, mm-hmm. you know, I think if... It's really hard because you see so many posts about lift heavy. If you're a woman over 40, lift heavy, really heavy, go to the gym, keep. And I think it has to be something that people can fit into their lives.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then going back to that ableism as well, not everybody exactly. can lift heavy. And so yes. I think it's, again, we're doing a big disservice to clients or anybody else who are trying to, you know, promote exercise to that. There's this idea that fitness only looks one way, right?
Way.
And then it prevents people from wanting to participate at all, because there's this idea of like, well, I'm never going to be able to lift yeah. this huge barbell over my head for a yeah. variety of reasons, whether it's, you know, differing abilities or chronic pain or whatever the case may be. So it's
also
like,
access to a gym.
Yes.
Not everybody has
yeah.
to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think access is the big word there too. So we want to make sure that we're promoting exercise in a way that is accessible to everybody yeah. and isn't alienating anyone, because it's just going to be a big barrier to people to even want to get started if they think that there's only one way that exercise is supposed to be.
And, you know, I always sort of say that strength training can look so many different ways
yep.
to mm-hmm. so many different people. It can be water bottles, yeah. it can be tin cans, it can be whatever you've got, and it can be 20 minutes once a week, or it can be, you know, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah,
lifting. If you love lifting heavy, that's fantastic. And
yeah, even hiking is strength training.
Yes,
kayaking is strength, like canoeing is strength training. And I think, understandably, a lot of people have honestly like PTSD from terrible experiences in fitness spaces. And mm-hmm. so, again, to promote that the only way that they can have a active life or have a movement routine is in a gym.
Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah, that they're not going to want to do that because of how they're treated because of their body size or whatever the case may be.
And, you know, I think that's okay. I think it's okay yeah. not to go to a gym because, you know, you talk about, oh, you're overcoming fears, et cetera. For some people, it is just a hugely triggering space, and it's
oh,
okay
absolutely.
To not want
yeah.
to go to a gym. And in fact, I was at a gym today and it was a lovely gym, but yeah, I was running on the treadmill. And there was a scale and, you know,
yeah.
something for a fat measurement tool. And it immediately sent me, it just made me recoil a little bit.
Yeah,
and, you know, I'm years into this work. I'm years yeah. into this, but I still was like, oh, should I, you know, I was almost thinking maybe I'll just pop on the, and I'm like, nope, stop it. Walk away.
That's, I feel the exact same way too. And I live further out of town, so going to a gym isn't really realistic anyways. But if I were to be going to a gym or a fitness studio, I would have to make sure that it's very aligned, because
yeah.
and then again, like, why would I don't want to support a gym or a studio that is perpetuating things that I don't believe in. So it's tough. You don't really know what you're going to get. And, you know, you'll see a lot of people in the fitness industry. They're constantly going to these different classes and they really love trying out these new studios. And I'm like, this is too much. This is too many things to go wrong. Too many variables for me.
Yeah. And I think it is, it's just finding somewhere that you feel comfortable or finding an instructor that, you know, if you do want to move and think about your relationship to movement, find somebody that you really trust and that, and it's about how you feel, how they make you feel rather than thinking about, you know, what the aesthetic outcome is going to be. But so I'm going to try and wind things up if I can.
I know we could keep you and I agree on everything. So we could just keep going forever.
I've got so many things still to talk about, but I would love to know, what is your favorite movement at the moment? What are you loving at the minute?
Kayaking. I think I've talked about it a few times, but I live on a big lake and it's summer here. Well, it's summer for you as well. But in Canada where I am, we have such short summers and then it's just terrible weather for the rest of the year. So, and that's another kind of thing that I wanted to touch on too, because yes, there's obviously the physical aspect of kayaking, but for a lot, almost every other activity too, it's not just the physical act of you doing it. It's, you know, the experience of being outside in nature and in seeing different things. And so I think too, doing things like that, where the focus isn't solely on a bicep curl. Like for the most part, you're doing a bicep curl, that's all that's really going on. But like if you're hiking, you know, you could be with friends and you could be getting social aspect out of it. So I think that if you're in a spot where you're not sure how to approach fitness or movement coming from more of a disordered relationship with it, try picking activities where the physical act of it isn't the only thing that's going on,
and involve the senses, like, you know, something you can see and hear and smell and touch, all of that. You know, we're very lucky, aren't we? I live in by the sea. I live right next to the sea, and I've started doing paddleboarding. Well, I haven't yet. I have stood up once on my paddleboard because we're in the sea, so it's not lit. Right. So it is, you know, quite wavy and choppy.
Rough ride.
And, you know, I think I've got, you know, strong core, but can I stand? Every time I try and stand up, my legs are shaking. But it is a wonderful, it's just the whole action of going down to the beach, blowing up the paddleboard and trying to find a wave you can get in on and trying to, it's very different than being in a gym or thinking about, you know, how long your workout's going to be. It's just
absolutely. Navigating. But just as much of a workout, like you're still getting physical and mental health benefits of the exercise that you're doing. 100%. So again, so much of this idea that only certain types of workouts count, only certain types of movement count, but that's not the case.
So we'll end it on that note. All movement counts. I think that is the key takeaway from today. Yeah. But Kira, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much. And I might have to get you back for part two.
Please. I'm looking forward to it already. Thank you so much for having me.
Lovely to chat to you. Bye.
See ya.